Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, and like Jessica said, this is a podcast devoted to highlighting the hard work progressives put in and day out to reverse the destructive Republican leadership of the last 40 years in our great state of Michigan. This is episode number 42, by the way. Hey, and I've talked with so many great people who are and have been on the front lines of the battle to make Michigan a more friendly, more welcoming, smarter, progressive and prosperous state. I've talked with activists, labor leaders, business experts, and those fighting for progressive change within our state government, like progressive state legislators Kelly Breen, Lori Pahutsky, and Dylan Wagella, and State Senator Mallory McMorrow. This week, I'm going to talk with another strong progressive voice who's been fighting for environmental justice, criminal justice reform, immigrant rights, LGBTQ plus rights, worker rights, protecting domestic abuse victims, and so much more while in the State House and the State Senate. Senators Stephanie Chang of Detroit will join me here in just a few moments, and you will want to stick around for that, I'm sure. Please remember that you can visit my blog, leftoflansing.com, to read more thoughts I've got on Michigan politics and more. And once you're there, you will also see a full archive of the podcast episodes. And let me just say a quick thanks again to my website advisor, Rich, for all of his hard work getting the site up and working as smoothly as possible. And most of all, for making it easy enough for someone like me to operate, and that is probably the most amazing feat. So, Rich, thank you once again for everything you've done. That's leftoflansing.com. I'd like to say another special thanks to Alexander Page from the Michigan Film Industry Association for joining me last week to discuss an upcoming proposal for film incentives here in the state of Michigan. I said going into that interview that I wasn't exactly sold on corporate giveaways since, as you all know, I'm not all for corporate welfare. More often than not, corporate welfare does not help the people. Oh, it helps corporations, but it doesn't help the people. However, I think I might be for this proposal because it is quite different than the original film incentives from last decade. Mr. Page said that the proposal is bipartisan, but it is being introduced by Democratic State Senator Dana Polhanki of Livonia, which leads me to already being open to the proposal since she is putting her name behind it, and I like that. The main differences that I liked about this proposal compared to the old film incentives is that this new proposal is about actually reinvesting in Michigan. The old incentives program kind of just handed out tax rebates to big production companies and they would walk away with the money no matter what. That's not to say that people inside Michigan did not benefit, but it did encourage money to leave the state. This proposal provides tax credits which don't leave the state. It's geared towards hiring Michigan workers. It's also got a cap on how much money will be spent, which I think is a wise move. And this proposal is called the Michigan Multimedia Jobs Act, which means its goal isn't just to develop a film industry. Its goal is to develop an industry designed for film, short films, commercials, and much more. As Senator Polhanki told WWJ Radio in Detroit, she said the proposal offers a tax rebate only if a production company provides receipts that show they spent money in Michigan, used Michigan vendors and Michigan personnel. So it's a big difference in approach. It's a smarter, more Michigan-centric bill, and she thinks it deserves to get a hearing, so she's planning to introduce it very soon. We will keep an eye out when it is introduced, but I have to admit, though, I was apparently off my game when speaking with Mr. Page last week because I let something slide, which I normally don't do in interviews. Here, listen from last week's podcast.
We want this to be how we diversify the economy, that we bring people here and grow the base. And not only that, what's nice about the film, TV, and commercials is that it's an extension of our tourism. People are still running up the Rocky Steps in Philadelphia. People still go to Iowa to see a baseball field. You know, the Major League Baseball has a game than a stadium just for Field of Dreams. So we know that there is the pride and we want to showcase the great stories that Michigan has. We have some of the best locations in the country. We're the best.
I mean, I cannot believe I did not say in response because, I mean, he slow pitched it up to me and I whiffed on it, completely whiffed on it. When he said that statement, I should have responded with, "So what you're saying, Alexander, is that if Michigan builds it, they will come." I mean, that's the kind of top-notch commentary and entertainment you expect from this grand podcast, and I failed. I failed utterly last week, and I would just like to send my sincere apology to all of the listeners. You expect more, and I should give you more, and I was not on top of my game. I'm sorry. I invite and implore you to check out my talk with Alexander Page on last week's podcast. Also, I wanted to give a shout-out to my guest from a couple of weeks ago, Michigan State University professor Josh Cowan. Dr. Cowan was on to talk about how school voucher plans have been a failure across the country, but how that really is not stopping the right wing and Betsy DeVos from fighting to get that same sort of failure here in the state. The plan is to erase or damage public schools. I mean, that's always what a voucher plan is all about. It's always been their plan. Oh, and while shoveling taxpayer dollars towards these schools, they also want very little oversight on the state level. How nice is that? Dr. Cowan's also been adamant how vouchers lead to schools discriminating against certain students they don't want, including those identifying as LGBTQ+. But Dr. Cowan hit on something this week that's been nagging me for a little while now. I've talked about this on the podcast in the past, that Michigan Democrats have passed education bills in both the State House and Senate, which increases per-pupil funding by thousands of dollars, boosting spending for low-income students, English learning students, also known as at-risk students, providing more funding for mental health services, and spending more on developing and keeping teachers. Again, common sense measures. But another aspect of these education bills that is simply huge for all families is the free breakfast and lunch programs. I mean, research is showing that universal breakfast and lunch programs are having positive results such as improved academic performance, quality of diet, and food security. I mean, wait. You mean to tell me that feeding children has positive results scholastically? You mean it has positive results for their health? No way. You don't say. Yes. And research is also showing it helps families in the pocketbook, too. Again, a stunning revelation. Oh, and further research reveals that once free lunch programs are enacted or expanded, just as Congress did last year, grocery chain stores slash their prices, too. A working paper by the National Bureau of Economic Research revealed that free school breakfast and lunches caused a significant decline in grocery sales at local retailers. Those chains responded by lowering prices across all their stores, leading nearby households to spend approximately 4.5% less on grocery bills in the areas where the policy was adopted. That's according to the 74million.com. So while that'll definitely help kids from struggling families, it'll also help most other families. So parents won't have to either plan what they're making their kids to eat that day or to make sure to set aside money every day. It also puts all the kids under the same umbrella. There's no lunch shaming happening with the students. I mean, this all makes sense. It all makes common sense. And it will help all students, educators, and families. I mean, isn't that what government is all about? Isn't government supposed to be about helping people? Not according to congressional Republicans, though. Oh, no. They have vowed to cut the federal school lunch program. And I was wondering why. I mean, other than to follow the Republican mantra that cruelty is the point, I was baffled as to why they'd want to cut the program. And that's where Dr. Cowan offered his expertise when he tweeted, "The main reason the right wants to prevent free meals is to avoid strengthening the community bond between parents and public schools. The other reason is it's a competitor to big anti-labor grocery chains." Huh, I mean, I get it now. The right wing and its big money backers want to do everything in its power to destroy public schools. They see the success a free meals program means at public schools across the country, and that's why they want to kill it. Oh, and then the hot fudge sauce on top of the sundae is, of course, they also want to kill competition for anti-labor grocery chains. Dr. Cowan also hammered home this point as well on Twitter. He said, "Running the list of things school vouchers activists are pushing for right now: restricting reproductive rights, book bans, hotlines and bounties to report teachers, limiting LGBTQ rights. School voucher backers also push for trafficking migrants, trauma kits in schools instead of common sense gun safety, voter suppression, and in some cases, election denial, and of course, rolling back child labor protections. Look, I'm not sure I can improve much further on Dr. Cowan's point, which is why I just simply don't understand how longtime Lansing media members simply refuse to understand, they just refuse to get, how this isn't the Governor Milliken Republicans anymore. Hell, this isn't even the John Engler Republican Party anymore. Not that they were any better, I mean, they did set a low bar, and now the head of the state Republican Party, Christina Caramo, a certified nutjob, is exactly smack dab in the center of where the grassroots of the state Republican Party is today. They want to ban basic American history books, erase marginalized citizens from their curriculum. They want to punish teachers for teaching, but then tell those same teachers that they must carry guns in the classrooms rather than passing laws that actually help protect children, as Democrats did this year. The right-wing Michigan Republican Party indeed wants to restrict a woman's abortion rights and contraception rights, of course. They turn a blind eye towards the trafficking of migrants, and they tried to overturn an election, mind you, many Republicans won, which would have meant their races would have been null and void as well. I know. I'm sure those races were on the up and up, of course. The Republican Party is so far to the extreme that we need strong progressives in our state legislature to fight back and bring things back to the common sense side of the political spectrum. And one of those strong progressives is State Senator Stephanie Chang, who will join me here right after this quick break. You are listening to LOL.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. If the podcast isn't enough and you are in need of more Pat, follow him on Twitter and like him on Facebook. Also, don't forget, you can read more of his thoughts and hear an archive of past episodes on leftoflansing.com.
You can always contact me via email, which is leftoflansing@gmail.com, if you'd ever like to continue a conversation on anything that I cover here. And in case I'm perhaps missing a story or an issue you think deserves coverage, just let me know. Again, that is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Well, Michigan Democrats have been busy ever since taking over the entire state government in decades, and it doesn't appear they're slowing down, and that makes sense because there's a lot to get done and there's a lot to fix. One of those Democrats who's been in the thick of Michigan politics as a community activist, as a state house representative, and now as a state senator is kind enough to spend time with me here this week. She's State Senator Stephanie Chang, and she's my guest on Left to Lansing. Senator Chang, thanks a lot for being on.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be on.
You represent District 3. That's around the Detroit area, right?
Yes. Detroit, Highland Park, Hamtramck, Madison Heights, Hazel Park, the west side of Warrens. Great tri-county district. I love it.
Have you lived in that area for most of your life?
Well, I actually grew up in Canton, moved to Detroit in 2005. It's a great district. I love it. You know, I really loved my old district, but I really love my new district too. Detroit's been home for a really long time. I love the community. It's where I'm raising my family. You know, one of the things that I love about this district is that it's got just such an amazing combination of urban and suburban communities with just so many different populations, different challenges, different strengths. It's really, really wonderful.
You just mentioned that you had to run for a completely different district, which was redrawn. Was that a challenge for you and for your campaign?
Well, we love learning new communities. We love getting to know folks. We love knocking on doors. And honestly, a lot of the communities that are in my new district are a really amazing fit for me and my team. A lot of the issues that we've been working on for the past 8 years really, really have a big impact on many of the communities that are in our new district. So just one example is, you know, I've worked on water affordability for 8 years, and now, of course, Highland Park is in my new district. And so it certainly has been challenging to get as much of a grasp as I can on ongoing water situation, but being able to apply some of what I have worked on and know to my new district has been a great experience. And with Hamtramck, you know, my parts of Oakland and Macomb County, it's just been really, really great. It's an honor to be able to serve. I love the new district. I certainly do have moments where I miss some parts of my old district, but definitely it's been good.
All right. Well, I have to ask you, since you just said you do represent Hamtramck, and of course, Hamtramck has been in the news of late. The city council voted to ban pride flags from all city-owned properties. Now, I read that there is a protest planned, I think, this coming Saturday, June 24th. That's being organized by LGBTQ plus residents and supporters. But the mayor wrote on Facebook saying that the protesters are outside agitators. I think that's it's kind of like how he described them. And I'll quote here. He says, there are people who are trying to create chaos, division, and disrupt the security in the city. I'm just wondering, since you're more familiar with that area than I am, is that your sense of the situation there in Hamtramck?
So I'll just back up and say the day after the city council voted last week on the resolution, which I should clarify, you know, for listeners, that it bans the flying of numerous types of flags, but was certainly prompted, obviously, during Pride Month by the notion of flying the Pride flag. So I just want to be clear that the resolution does ban numerous flags, but certainly the Pride flag. And we know that that is really harmful to LGBTQ residents in Hamtramck. And so the day after that vote, I did put out a statement really trying to let Hamtramck residents who are LGBTQ plus to let them know that I am proud to be an ally, that I want to be supportive, that at the state level, we're doing a lot of good work to expand Elliot Larson, to ban conversion therapy, all of these things. So we have been really working hard, really want to make sure that folks know that there are folks who have their back and that we're going to continue to support them. As far as Saturday, I actually have been contacted by the organizers of that event. And to my understanding, Hamtramck residents, you know, I think that it's really important to point out that, of course, there are folks who are concerned from across the state watching what's happening in Hamtramck, but there are LGBTQ residents in Hamtramck that are really concerned about what's going on. I think, especially during a time like this, when we know that attacks on LGBTQ residents are on the rise across this whole country, and knowing, you know, the bullying that young people can face in school, it's really, really important that we're doing positive things to make communities more welcoming and not go in the backward direction. So I've definitely been watching all of this closely, have been reaching out to friends and others in Hamtramck to find out ways that I can be supportive as an ally. And I'm hoping to drop by on Saturday to, you know, listen to what folks have to say. And again, for me, my priority is making sure that LGBTQ residents in Hamtramck know that they do have an ally in me and that I want to be supportive and as helpful as I can.
Marginalized groups always, we know, get attacked through time. I understand that. But, and I'm just going for your own personal opinion here on this issue. Did it catch you off guard with how rampant and how energized those on the right and those on the conservative side of the aisle would be on this whole issue of rolling back LGBTQ rights?
Well, I'll start by saying, you know, I'm really glad that we have a Democratic majority in the state House and in the state Senate, and that we've got an ally to the LGBTQ community in the governor's office and in, you know, Attorney General Dana Nessel's office. Well, she is a member of the LGBTQ community, and I think that all of us are here to have the backs of the community. I think, unfortunately, it's not that surprising that these kinds of anti-trans, anti-LGBT bills are being introduced all across the country, literally hundreds of bills. It's terrifying to watch. I'm glad that in Michigan that those bills will never see the light of day while Democrats have the gavels. But unfortunately, it's not that surprising because we continue to see the Republican Party and conservative elements continue to be really focused on hate and division and fear rather than focusing on how can we support, how can we be welcoming, and how can we bring people together, which is the direction that we should be moving in. But I think that in Michigan, what we know is that that type of trying to create more division and fear didn't work in Michigan. We saw the results of that in the November election. And so we've got to continue the forward momentum. We've got to continue to do things like what the House did just yesterday in passing the Hate Crimes Act. And we've got to continue to find ways to support all marginalized communities, especially the LGBTQ community in this moment where, you know, our young people who are part of that community are really under attack. And it's really, really sad. It's terrifying to watch, you know, what we see going on around the country. But I'm hopeful that in Michigan, we can continue to move forward, not backward.
Just because you mentioned it, the Michigan Hate Crimes Act that passed the House, that what does that do? That updates hate crime laws to protect LGBTQ plus and others, right? Like elderly people.
So it's an expansion in a number of ways. I want to give a huge shout out and kudos to Representative Noah Arbit, who led these bills, and expansion in a number of ways. So it also includes houses of worship who may get vandalized. So there's a new bill around desecration of houses of worship. There's an expansion of the ethnic intimidation statute, and now we're renaming it, you know, the hate crimes law. And I'm really excited to see those move forward. I'm eager to take up the bills in committee as soon as we can.
Democratic State Senator Stephanie Chang is on the podcast here this week. Senator, I know that you've spent a lot of your time too on environmental justice, which I argue must be an important plank if we hope to not only make this a more attractive state, but also a healthier state for the people who live within it. And a bill you introduced in the Senate, I think it's Senate Bill 26, which ensures that the fines paid by polluters will actually help those who suffered the pollution. Could you talk a little bit more about that bill, which it passed last week, right?
It did. Yeah, it passed the Senate. It's on its way to the House. I'm hopeful that we can get that moving in the House and start to see the benefits of that bill. So, you know, this is something that I've been working on for a long time. Ever since I took office in 2015, I have been to just numerous hearings around the consent orders, which are developed as a result of a violation. Notice that, you know, our state's environmental department puts out when a company violates the air quality standards or violates their permits. And because right now in law, we don't have anything that says where that money goes, the money just goes into the general fund. And so I had heard time and time again from residents, where is this money going? Why isn't it coming back to help us in our community, those who suffered from this air pollution and this violation? And it was a really important question to ask, why is this the law? Why aren't we changing it? So back when I was in the House, we developed this legislation, and so happy that we finally got it moving now with the new makeup of the legislature. And really what this bill does is it's very simple. It doesn't change anything about how much violators pay. It simply redirects the money to make sure that it goes back to the community in the form of grants to help support things like air monitoring and health impact assessments and buffering and other ways to mitigate air pollution in our communities. And one of the things that I'm really excited about is that I believe, I'll have to double check, but I believe this might be the first bill that we pass that includes the term environmental justice, because we want to prioritize environmental justice communities in terms of receiving these funds, which I think is very historic. This bill is not going to honestly impact polluting companies very much in terms of, it doesn't impact how much money they're going to pay, but it's going to have a giant impact for the neighborhoods that live close to some of these facilities that I think for just many, many years have felt like everything is stacked against them. So I'm excited to see this hopefully move through the process. We're going to work really hard to make sure it becomes law, because we know that our communities that suffer from asthma and COPD and other respiratory diseases, they deserve to have clean air and they deserve to have that money come back to help them. It's a big priority for me. I'm excited about the work ahead.
Revolutionary thinking there. People deserve to have clean air to breathe. I know. I was just wondering if you know when the State House will pick up this bill.
I had an initial conversation with the chair of that committee, but we obviously are in a busy couple weeks here with wrapping up the budget. So I'm going to push hard to make sure that we get this moving, you know, as soon as we can in the fall when we return from summer recess, because it's a big priority for me. It's a big priority for a lot of environmental justice communities. So hopefully we can get it done.
Staying on the environment here for just another second, you and your Senate Democratic colleagues passed a bill last month reversing a Republican law passed back in the lame duck session of Rick Snyder's final term. The new law erases the environmentally harmful no stricter than federal law. Can you, Senator, talk just a little bit more about that and what it means here?
Senator Sean McCann from Kalamazoo has been a longtime champion of this issue. I'm really glad that we passed this bill to reverse this law that many of us voted no on, you know, when we voted on it in the House many years ago. In my view, we should be giving our state government as many tools as we can to be able to protect public health and our environment as possible. And if we can innovate, if we can adjust quickly to changing situations, to new understanding, new scientific research around new types of pollutants and contamination that we are continuously learning about, we should be able to have that kinds of flexibility. And that law that basically restricted our state government's ability to react quickly was, I think, really backward thinking. And so, again, this is just yet another example of how under this new majority for the people, we're actually prioritizing people, we're prioritizing public health, we're prioritizing the natural resources that we have in our state, which we love here in Pierre, Michigan. And now we need to walk that walk and make sure that we're actually doing everything we can to protect public health. And, you know, one example is PFAS, right? You know, when more and more news came out several years ago around PFAS and just the fact that it is everywhere in our state, and that we are learning about this type of contaminant, we need to be able to react quickly and we need to be able to adjust. And if we're the state that is going to lead and learn more about this type of contaminant, we need to be able to not have to always wait for the federal government and instead be able to, you know, enact our own regulations that are stronger. I think PFAS is just a perfect example of why this bill is needed. And also, we've got to recognize that it's a good thing that we continue to learn about science. And we've got to be able to react quickly. And we've got to be able to give our state officials the tools that they need to be able to do everything they can to protect human health.
Senator, I read where Republicans who voted against this particular bill, they said they worried that it'll hurt businesses and the farming industry in the long run. What is your take on that position?
Again, I think that what's important, the most important thing is protecting Michiganders. And to me, I think what's best for people and for business is a healthy population that where we address pollution, where we address public health issues in a way that is more nimble, in a way that is proactive, in a way that is smart and science-based. And so to anyone who would argue that this bill is bad for business, I would say, actually, I think a healthier population, a healthier set of Michiganders is ultimately better for business and better for Michigan overall.
Democratic State Senator Stephanie Chang is on the podcast this week. Well, before you join me here today, I talked about the education budgets passed by both the State House and Senate and how Democrats set aside, I believe, $160 million to be used for free breakfast and lunches at all public schools. And this would be good for all students. And of course, Republicans criticized that measure and other parts of the whole education budget. But we do have evidence. This is what I was talking about before you got on, that we do have evidence showing that free meals to public school students work in a number of ways. And of all things to criticize, I don't know why Republicans would be against this particular part of the bill, do you?
And then another example of why, you know, this majority for the people is working and working really, really hard to get things done in a way that is smart and is more proactive and is better for everyday Michiganders. When we're talking about kids learning in schools, it's hard for kids to learn if they can't focus because they didn't eat anything for breakfast or their family doesn't have enough money to buy all the food that they need to make sure that they can go to school and be able to learn. And so for me, ensuring breakfast and lunch available for every student should be a no-brainer. We probably shouldn't have done it years ago. And I also think that it will help to address any issues related to stigma around free and reduced lunch that exists now, because we need to make sure that every kid is fed, not only so that they can grow and they can be healthy, but also so that they can go into that classroom ready and prepared to learn and not be distracted by the hunger pains that they might otherwise have. So to me, it's a no-brainer. It's honestly really ridiculous to me that anyone would want to argue against it, but I'm just really happy that we're all moving towards getting that done.
Can you give an update on your efforts to get collective bargaining rights for Detroit public school teachers back?
Well, really excited that earlier this week, the House did vote on my bill to restore collective bargaining rights for Detroit Public Schools Community District teachers. Back in 2016, when the new school district was created to help address the debt issues with the old DPS, you know, Republicans who were in the majority at the time included a provision that stripped away collective bargaining rights for Detroit teachers with regard to how long a teacher has been teaching and advanced degrees when it comes to determining compensation. And so this bill simply just restores Detroit teachers' ability to bargain on those issues, which puts them back on the same playing field as every other public school teacher in the state. And it's really an issue of fairness. So I'm really, really excited that the House did vote on that bill. So it's headed to the governor for her signature. I think that it'll be a really good thing for so many Detroit teachers who need to be treated fairly.
Only just a couple moments left here, so I just want to ask you a couple more things. You brought it up already about the budget process. Are you confident everything will get passed by the July 1st deadline? I mean, this is the first time Democrats have been in complete control of the budget process. Oh, let's see, since I was jamming the hall notes as a second grader.
We're really excited about this work. Want to give a ton of credit to appropriation chairs in both the Senate and House who have been working really hard, as well as all the subcommittee chairs. From everything that I've been hearing in many conversations about the budget, various aspects of the budget, everything seems to be moving forward in a very productive way. The goal is absolutely to make sure that budget gets done before July 1. And I'm excited that we're going to have, a historic budget in many, many ways. It's going to be exciting. And I think it will be a really good example of, again, how, you know, when Democrats are in charge, we get good things done for people and we're focused on the things that really matter to Michiganders.
Dumbest question of the interview, but I assume it is nice being the majority for once.
Really nice to be in the majority. Also, really, we have got just so much work to do. We've been able to get a lot done in the past couple months, and we've got much, much, much more to do. All of us are really working hard, very focused. Every issue matters that we're working on right now. And I think that it's been gratifying to see these policies move, and want to thank Michigan voters for making all of this possible, because we are here to keep delivering for Michiganders and do the work that people sent us to the Capitol to do.
Can I ask just one last question?
Yeah.
Reading your bio, you've been involved in the political scene for what seems like most of your adult life. What made you such a politically active person? And do you think there's more that maybe the Democratic Party or others can do to reach out to Gen Z voters and to keep them engaged and active in the political process?
Well, so I, you know, have been involved in a lot of different issues for a long time, ever since really I was in high school and college, getting really active on issues. At first, you know, issues affecting students of color when I was on campus, and just have continued to be an organizer in multiple different ways now, obviously, as a public servant. I think, honestly, a lot of it comes from being a daughter of immigrant parents who instilled in me a really strong set of values when it comes to opportunity, which is what they came here for. And really believing that we need to make a world that is more fair and just. I think I have a pretty strong moral compass, and that has driven me to do the things that I'm working on right now and have been for the past 8 years. And even before being in office, we're starting to see, well, not starting to see, but we have seen from Gen Z just an enormous amount of new energy from young voters. We saw historic turnout from young voters in the election last year. And so I'm hopeful that we'll continue to see that going forward. And of course, not just in elections, but also in, you know, civic engagement more broadly, in young people being engaged on issues that matter to them and really pushing for issues that they care about, because I think that we're all better when we have more young people engaged. And it's really exciting. So I'm hopeful that young folks will continue to be engaged. We've seen that, you know, on issues like gun violence in particular, but also, of course, safe and legal abortion and voting rights, many, many other issues. So I think that we're going to continue to see that, and want to encourage any young listeners to continue to be engaged.
Democratic State Senator Stephanie Chang of Detroit, thank you so very much for spending some time here. And thank you for being not just a progressive voice, but a strong progressive voice in the state legislature, and just for fighting to get things done. And I had so many other questions for you, but if it's all right, I'd love to have you back on sometime in the future.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Thank you again to Senator Stephanie Chang for spending some of her valuable time talking with me here this week. She's a strong leader with strong convictions designed to help people and thereby help the entire state. That's the entire reason why people get involved in politics, why they get involved in government, to help people. We need strong, progressive voices like Senator Chang, and I can't wait to have her back here in the future. And talking with Senator Chang just confirms for me how deep of a talented and progressive bench there is within the state Democratic Party. I'll leave ways for you to contact Senator Chang on the episode page located at leftoflansing.com. Time now for the last call. You know, the Hamtramck City Council's decision to ban the Pride flag has elicited a spirited response from opponents, of course. Steve Neeling from the Detroit Metro Times reports that LGBTQ plus residents and allies plan to converge on Hamtramck City Hall on Saturday afternoon, protesting the all-male Muslim City Council's decision to ban the Pride flag from all city properties. In response, Hamtramck Mayor Amir Ghalib on Sunday pledged the city would not budge and baselessly suggested the protesters were outside agitators. Now, that's a strange response from the mayor, considering that the outside agitators are usually the ones fighting against LGBTQ plus rights. Just saying. Steve Neeling continued to write, supporters of the Pride flag said city leaders sent a message of intolerance and bigotry. This political stunt is causing a lot of hate and division in our community. Hamtramck resident Linda Ward responded to the mayor on Facebook. Rather than being a peacemaker and bridge builder, you're ripping apart the fabric of our community. The protest will take place on Saturday, June 24th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Look, bigotry comes in all forms, and in one of the more cynical plays I've seen in a while, and that says a lot when it comes to today's right wing, conservative talkers are trying to convince Muslim Americans to join their side. I mean, that's pretty rich considering how the right wing has treated people of the Muslim faith for the last two decades, but I mean, they're willing to try. Suddenly, they've seen the light and are now tolerant of the Muslim faith. You know better. Anyway, that's why I'm turning over the last call this week to House Speaker Pro Tem and friend of the podcast, Lori Pohutsky from Livonia. She gave this speech in support of a House resolution declaring June of 2023 Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Plus Month. Now, Representative Pohutsky starts off by explaining the efforts that she and other Democrats had to put forth with previous Pride Month resolutions. So please listen.
That resolution's passage in 2021 should have been a moment of celebration. And in many ways, it was. It was the first time that this body and our colleagues in the Senate took the affirmative step to declare that our state honored the history of the LGBTQ plus community. But that step didn't come without a fight, as so few of our steps do. At that point, there were only three out members in the entire legislature: former Representative Tim Sneller, Senator Jeremy Moss, and myself. Tim and I had agreed that I would introduce the resolution with absolutely no expectation that it would be adopted. However, that year, the Senate adopted Senator Moss's version, so we brought it to the then Speaker. He proposed to our leadership at the time that the House, too, would adopt the resolution under the conditions that we not speak to it, and that my name come off as sponsor. Representative Sneller, who is always one to roll with the punches, and I put his name on it, introduced it, and it was adopted, and history was made. There was little time to negotiate, and in all honesty, I am pretty sure that the choice had already been made for me before I was brought into the conversation. But I did struggle a lot with that decision after the fact. The entire point of Pride and this resolution, and that one too, is to honor the history and struggle of our community, celebrate our achievements, and appreciate everything that makes us unique. And I felt like I was tarnishing and cheapening that by giving in to arbitrary demands about who should get to represent our community. I was being told that I was, quote, too much, and to just sponsor a simple resolution. And forgive me, Madam Speaker, for this personal point, but it's an important one. As a bisexual woman, I have always been too much of one thing for some people and simultaneously too little of another for others to actually belong anywhere. And being confronted with that at work compounded the feeling that I was letting people down by capitulating. But at the same time, I also knew that this was the only thing that this body at the time was going to give the LGBTQ plus community to celebrate. The behind the scenes back and forth could remain there for the moment, but we could just come together to celebrate a historic, albeit symbolic, victory. And we did. And when the exact same thing happened the following year in 2022, it hurt just as much, perhaps even more, because I knew that Tim would be leaving me soon, and I would be alone in this chamber in that regard. And I worried that we would lose the progress, the tiny bit of progress, that that resolution created. But as it turns out, the people of Michigan had my back, and they sent me some reinforcements. So this Pride Month, we have so much more to celebrate. We are working to make Michigan a place where the LGBTQ plus community can live and love safely with public servants that not only respect them, but reflect them. And while we are passing so much more than a symbolic resolution these days, this resolution and its adoption embody the spirit of pride and the ability to look back at a history of violence, fear, and oppression, and to look at the very present threats and dangers right in their face and celebrate anyway. And I want to let every LGBTQ plus Michigander know, from this tiny, loud, queer, too much representative, you are not too much. You are not too little. You are perfect. You are loved, and you belong here.
In Michigan, all people belong. If we're going to be a strong and prosperous state in the future, we have to be the place where everyone knows they belong. That's not just how we'll get people to come here. That's how we will get people to stay here. We cannot let the right-wing Christian nationalists take us back. We have to move forward. We have to progress, and we have to become more enlightened. But that's exactly what the big money right-wing donor base is fighting against.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Left of Lansing. Thank you again to State Senator Stephanie Chang for being on this week. She's been doing some great work to make government help people. And that's what I said earlier. Government should always help people. And the senator gave us so many examples on how progressive policies are being passed in our state legislature designed to help people, not to screw things up for everyone at the expense of the rich donor base. It's designed to help people. And Senator Chang is a fighter for the people. She's also a fighter for making this a better state in the future. That's leadership. No, that's bold leadership. And by the way, progressive policies not only help people, but they are quite popular as well. It's up to us, though, to keep pressing for these important changes and to have the backs of those fighting for that change. Remember to follow me on Twitter, the Gram, and Facebook. I will talk to you next week. And remember to take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.